We're gonna bury Ferrari at Le Mans.
So the great Carroll Shelby is gonna build a car to beat Ferrari with a Ford.
Correct.
And how long did you tell them you needed? 200 or 300 years?
90 days.
Hello and welcome to Step and Repeat, a weekly movies and award season podcast. I am your co-host, Andrew.
And I'm your other co-host, Matt.
And this week, I think our top story is going to be Ford versus Ferrari, which is the new car racing biopic starring Matt Damon and Christian Bale. So, but before we're off to the races, as they say... I think we wanted to touch base about other topics.
Veer left into the other lane.
Full of dad jokes. Like, this is pretty representative of our lives in general.
But we're both not dads.
But we're both not dads. So, yeah, this was actually a big week for television and movies.
Yeah.
The launch of the much anticipated Disney Plus.
Woohoo!
Do you have an account?
I mooch. Yeah.
I don't know what their feelings are on that.
I share.
Cause like Netflix.
I paid for the first month.
Oh. I think there's like a deal with Verizon. Don't quote me on this, but I think if you have Verizon Wireless, you get like a year free of Disney Plus. I've heard that. Oh. Look into it. Google it.
Yeah.
Find out.
So I get my own for a year.
I got
thank you. Thank you. You know who you are. Thank you. An avid listener of ours.
Thank you, mystery listener.
Yeah.
So either way, you have access to Disney Plus.
I do. Yes. Do you?
And I do. I got the yearly subscription.
Oh. Your own.
My own. Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. And have you watched anything on Disney Plus yet?
I have. Yeah. I started The Mandalorian, watched the first two episodes of that.
Mm-hmm.
Very impressed.
Yeah.
Very impressed with the quality.
I like it.
I think it's actually better than most Star Wars movies I've seen recently, to be honest with you. But yeah, as you know my feelings on the new Star Wars movies. But I do enjoy the spinoffs. So like, I really liked Rogue One. And this kind of feels like Rogue One, like, you know, one of the in-between stories, its own separate thing. I really enjoy it. I think it's a fun show to watch, and you know, the Baby Yoda helps.
Baby Yoda, I'm in love with Baby Yoda.
Is it Yoda? Is he? We don't know.
We know. Spoiler alert for The Mandalorian. We know definitively that it's not Yoda because in The Mandalorian, it takes place after the Return of the Jedi, and Yoda died in the Return of the
right,
Jedi.
Right, right. But there's also theories out there that Yoda
like
reincarnated could come back. We don't know yet. Yeah. We don't know where this is going. There's so many questions. And
Well, also, we know that Baby Yoda is 50 years old.
Yeah.
And this is less than 50 years after Yoda's death.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's any way it can be Baby Yoda.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like a real Baby Yoda.
Or maybe Yoda's child.
Or a clone. Or, like it could be a clone because, like, The Mandalorian and Stormtroopers are all tied to clones somehow. It's like when they really got involved in that. So it very well could be a clone.
We'll see.
I know. I'm excited. It's much shorter than I expected. Like the episodes are only 30 to 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so
I like it. I like that. I have no problem with it. That's like an hour long show on TV.
One of my
commercials.
Pet peeves about Netflix is when Netflix airs dramas that are just overly long.
Yeah, and have to be like 13 episodes.
Yeah, and it's like...
It's annoying.
I mean, if you only have 50 minutes worth of episode, do not put like an hour and 15 minutes worth of content.
I felt like that was a big problem with like the Marvel shows on Netflix, is that they all had to be 13 episodes and they were all like an hour plus, and it was just too much.
Yeah.
There's too much. There's like a lot of... It just got really boring and old.
Yeah, it's too much story.
Yeah, way too much.
I think there's a reason why commercial TV had like the story structure that like fit very well for like a 45 minute model. Mm-hmm. And like, yes, that can be expanded to like 50 plus minutes or so, but mm-hmm. that's why you really feel it sometimes if yeah. it's an hour.
And another show that just came out, The Crown came out today.
Yes. Yeah,
today's Sunday,
yeah.
November 17th. Crown came out. I binged a lot of it today, and each episode is really short. At least the ones I've watched were like 45 minutes or less.
Yeah.
And it's great. Like, it holds my attention. Yeah, yeah, you watched first.
I watched the first episode.
Really, really impressed. Love. With Olivia Colman.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I'm so impressed. I love Olivia Colman.
I forgot how much I love this
yeah.
show.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been 2 years.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Something like that.
So here's hoping for her Emmy next year.
Well, The Crown is so fascinating because you would expect it to be dry. Like, oh, here's this show about the British, like, royalty. Mm. And it's so juicy and yeah. scandalous. It's a soap opera, kind of.
Yeah, they find a way to really ramp that drama up.
And it's so funny. I tweeted about this. And I said, whenever I watch The Crown and something historical happens on The Crown that's like a little lesser known, I'm like, there's no way that happened in real life. Mm-hmm. And then I go on Google and then like, holy shit, that actually happened in real life. Yeah. This is real yeah. life drama.
And it also helps that they just have absolutely amazing talent in yeah. there. So, yeah. you know, Olivia Colman and Helena Bonham Carter and
Tobias Menzies.
Yes. Yeah. And he's a Prince
Philip.
Philip. Yes. All right. We haven't gotten to Prince Charles yet. So, or the kids. We have seen the youngest daughter in the first half of the season. I forget their names.
Anne,
yeah.
We should have friend of the pod, Beth, come back on. She was our British cinephile.
I watched it with her today. It was very helpful.
Yeah, she would
she's
know
my,
a lot.
She's my walking, talking Wikipedia. Because, like, to be honest, like, when I'm watching that show sometimes, I will have to stop and, like, pause and check Google or Wikipedia, like, just to catch myself up on, like, the history behind what's happening in some episodes. Because, like, some I just, like, I'm like, wait, when did that happen? Did I remember that? Did I learn about that? So, yeah, it's a great show.
It's great.
Yeah. But anyways, veering back to the Disney Plus lane, I don't know if you want to...
No, that was...
I actually, last night, I spent my Saturday night... I watched Lady and the Tramp on Disney Plus, the live action version.
Yeah.
And I have to say, it was actually one of the better live action Disney movies. I was very impressed with it. I thought it was very cute and very well done. There was more emotions on the dog's face than there were in the faces in The Lion King on the lions and the animals. So I thought that was, I think maybe Disney started to learn their lesson from that.
To bring back our conversation from the last episode about the Uncanny Valley.
The Uncanny Valley, yeah. Yeah, I think maybe Disney was like, oh, maybe they have a point about the emotionless animals.
They Sonic the Hedgehog did.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, wow, yeah. people don't like this? Let's go back and change it.
By the way, Sonic looks great now. I personally didn't have a problem with it before. It's like, you know, studio creativity or whatever. I don't have a problem with people changing up, like characters that we know, like, as long as they're still, like, kind of true to the character. Like, I was fine with the Sonic, but I'm fine with the, I like the Sonic redesign more, but I was fine with it before.
Props to the filmmakers for that, for turning that around.
Yeah.
That is not easy work.
for getting bullied by Twitter
but literally.
Yeah.
I'm super impressed with them.
Yeah. So, like, the animation, like, top notch, like Lady and the Tramp. I enjoyed it. It was a very cute movie. To be honest, I've never seen the original, and I
really
I've never seen the original Lady and the Tramp. And as I mean, I obviously should. So
it's been a long time since I've seen it. Yeah. I haven't seen it since I was a child.
Mm-hmm. So, and Justin Theroux and Tessa Thompson.
Yeah,
threw their voices in there. They're good.
The spaghetti scenes in there, right?
Oh yeah, of course the spaghetti scenes.
It has to be. Yeah.
So, and the guy. The guy from Titanic, I'm blanking on his name.
Billy Zane?
No. The guy who gets on the boat first, and he's like, remember the guy with the mustache, and he gets on the boat first.
Oh, he was the engineer, not the engineer, right?
Yeah,
he worked for the Starline.
This ship can't sink.
Oh, is he in it?
He's in it. He sings. Yeah. He sings Bella Notte.
Oh, okay.
So,
is he the the waiter?
Yeah. It's cute. It's a cute scene.
Gosh, all these people from Titanic are popping up. Rose's mom is on Watchmen this season.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Billy Zane's been in quite a bit.
Whatever happened to the leads, like Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio? What have they done?
No idea.
Nothing.
You'd have to check.
Losers.
Yeah. What's her name?
Kathy Bates.
Kathy Bates. Gosh. Unsinkable Molly Brown.
Yeah.
What's she doing? So, anyway.
Digress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Disney Plus, I'm a fan. I like it. You know, we'll see. It's, you know, it's got a lot of content, but it doesn't have everything you're looking for from Disney, obviously.
They got me to give them money.
Yeah. In a sense, it's, you know, it's, in a sense, it's like Netflix. It's got a similar Netflix setup. But,
yeah,
and it doesn't, but, you know, Netflix obviously doesn't have everything, and nor does Disney Plus.
Well, they also learn from their mistakes to an extent, or learn from Netflix's mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
there's also, like, there's also the problem of, like, where are we going from here in terms of streaming services? How many is too many, you know? Because right now you've got...
The reason people cut the cord together because it was too expensive.
And, like, people are cutting out cable now.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been cutting cable for a long time, but, like, now it's even more of a reason to cut it. So, I don't know. I'm actually considering cutting cable.
Yeah.
I don't really need it.
Exactly.
I rarely watch cable. Like, yeah. Rarely.
I watch it for live events, like sports or award shows.
Sports, award shows, and news, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Live TV is the reason I watch TV.
I don't even know where I watch.
With the rare exception of, like, a TV show that I really, really, really care about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was always, like, a Big Bang Theory fan and, like a Lost fan, or, like, you know, those older shows that are, like, now starting to die out.
Yeah, those were a long time ago in comparison. In TV world, those were a long time ago.
The Office, Parks and Rec, all that. Yeah. Of course, like, I was a big fan of those. And now you can stream them on whatever streaming services you have. So, like CBS All Access. Like, why would I pay for that if I, like, you know...
Yeah, that's
the point. Unless I want to watch, like, Picard or whatever.
Yeah.
So...
Well, so Disney Plus has such a big catalog now because Disney now owns 20th Century Fox,
right?
Which is actually going to, which is the distributor of our main story tonight too, Ford versus Ferrari.
Yes.
But before we dive into that, is there anything else you?
I mean, I could talk about Disney Plus for an hour, but I'm sure we'll come back to it. Later episodes.
After we binge on Even Stevens.
Yes. Make me feel like a 11-year-old again. So.
Yeah. But,
So Raven is on there, and I love that show.
Yeah, there's that show about that girl, too. It's like Zarlan. What is it?
Xenon. Girl of the 21st
century. Xenon, girl of the 21st century.
It's a DCOM.
Yeah.
Disney Channel original movie. It's not a show, Andrew. Yeah.
Well, the entire...
I think it was the first Disney Channel movie. I could be wrong, but I don't know.
Available on Disney Plus today.
Yes.
I shall watch it. But into 20th Century Fox / Ford versus Ferrari. So Ford versus Ferrari just came out this past weekend, November 15th, and was a pretty decent hit at the box office. And both Matt and I got the opportunity to see it. And I'll give folks, like, a little bit of a rundown for people who don't know what Ford versus Ferrari is. That's sounds good.
Sounds good to me. Yeah.
So this movie is based on the true story of a respected car driver at Ford, Carroll Shelby, who is played by Matt Damon.
Sorry.
And also an eccentric car race driver named Ken Miles, played by Christian Bale. And they set out to beat Ferrari, the car company, at Le Mans, which is a prestigious 24-hour sports car race in France. And it takes place in the 60s when Ford was in a little bit of a slump, and they wanted to kind of rebrand itself as, like, the cool car. So that led to this mission to beat Ferrari. And throughout the movie, it follows this team of engineers. They kind of, like, navigate both the corporate world at Ford and the world of sports car racing. And that's the kind of basic premise.
Mm-hmm.
And
kind of a, you know, kind of a feel good.
Yes.
Edge of your seat.
Yeah.
Thrill ride, I would say.
Yeah.
So.
So I had a blast watching this movie.
Oh my God. So much fun. I'm telling everyone to see it. Like the first thing I think I was like, oh, what do you recommend? Like, there's, I don't know. There's a lot of like the first thing I say is like, you need to see Ford v Ferrari. Like, stop what you're doing and go see Ford v Ferrari. Right,
I've also been calling it Ford v Ferrari.
It's I know. It's technically Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah.
So
when it's like written out, it's like V as if it's like a Supreme Court case or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
it's easier to say.
Yeah, I think so too. But like all the commercials, they say Ford versus Ferrari. So I'm trying to.
I think the studio is branding it as Ford versus Ferrari.
So I think it's a great title. I think that's a cool title.
It is a cool title. Yeah, they really could have gone with anything.
Like, yeah.
But so, but I mean, like, and like look, watching this movie, if it almost felt like Ford versus Ford versus Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah, it's
So like,
this is more about the Fords.
Way more about Ford. Yeah, and they could have easily, like, they could have like shifted their focus more on Ferrari. But, like, this was heavy, like, heavy Ford.
Ferrari's kind of the villain, in a way. Kind of.
Yeah.
In a way, so... Or I shouldn't say villain, but antagonist.
Antagonist. Someone you're, rooting against.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's...
But, like, the question is, like, this movie is, like, who are you rooting for at Ford? There's also antagonists on the Ford side. That's why I say it's, like, Ford v. Ferrari.
So. Like, the corporate people at Ford. Like, the red tape. Mm. Like, the people, the managers who, like, get in the way of creativity, essentially. Yeah.
I just say, like, I didn't know anything about Le Mans or this race.
Oh,
I'm not a big racing person. I never was. So, and, like, as you know, like, I don't really watch trailers for movies. Like, especially ones I want to see. And I know that's weird. A lot of people think that's weird. And, like, I just, I like to go into movies blind. So, when I, like, was going into this movie... I, for some reason, like, thought, like, Matt Damon was, like, Ford and Christian Bale was Ferrari. So, like, I was...
I thought they were going against each other.
I was really surprised that the two of them were working together, and I was, like, really happy about it. Like, I know that sounds really weird, but, like, I'm like, oh, they're, like, on the same side. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah, like, that makes, like, this movie so much better. For me, I don't know. Like, that's also, like, so that's just, like, an example of, like, why I like going in blind. Like, there's little surprises like that. So, and, like, oh, this movie, like, proved... me wrong, you know, it's not like prove me wrong, but like, oh, it like proved like what I thought, you know, what I thought I knew was wrong. So I like those little surprises and nuances.
Yeah. To talk about Matt Damon and Christian Bale, like performances.
Can we come back to that? Like,
we'll come back to the performances.
Okay. Like, I want to give shout outs to two people. I don't know how to pronounce Katarina?
Katrina Balfe.
She plays Molly Miles, and it's
Christian Bale's wife
in the movie, and I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah, she's a great actress.
Yeah, she's an Outlander, right?
Yeah, she's been nominated for Golden Globes like for 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah.
I actually think she looks a little like Ellie Kemper, so I thought like Ellie Kemper.
I never thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I kept like seeing Ellie Kemper in this movie.
So about, to say on her, at least for a little bit, if there's one kind of flaw, major flaw in this movie is that the lack of female characters, which I think is a reoccurring theme in 2019 in particular, is
the Mandalorian.
Oh yeah.
Well, we haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah. But like, there's a lot of movies that kind of feature like, that are very male driven and feature like not many female characters, and the female characters tend to be the supportive wives. So it's interesting because I thought Katrina Balfe was excellent.
Well, we have Cats coming up, so
yeah, and Little Women.
Yeah.
But so Katrina Balfe was excellent role, excellent actress. Her character in and of itself was great, but she only kind of existed in the context of her family, like her husband and her kid.
Yeah, so, but she made it
hers. Yeah,
like, for the little role she got, totally she made it hers.
Totally agree.
And she made, like, she really was that supporting actress they needed. There's a scene when they're fighting on the lawn in front of her, and she just takes a chair and, like, unfolds it and puts it on the lawn and, like,
because she's, like, bored with them
she's
fighting.
She's like, oh, you know, boys will be boys. And, like she just, like, yeah. It was such a, like, a... It was, like, one of the more memorable scenes, I think, in the movie. Just, like, her reaction to it.
Yeah, she. I thought she was great too.
Yeah,
loved
her. I loved. I'm a fan of her.
Yeah.
I've never seen Outlander.
Neither have I.
But I heard it's a good show.
Yeah. No, it's has a lot of love.
Yeah.
You wanted to single out another.
Well, yeah, and then so like, there's two like. So I know John Barenthal and Josh Lucas, who we haven't seen in a long time, are also in this, and they give pretty good performances. But I thought like, besides Matt Damon and Christian Bale, who like, if I were to give another Oscar nomination in this movie, and I don't know how you feel about this, but Tracy Letts as Henry Ford, I thought killed the role. I thought he was great. Like, I thought, I just thought like his like emotions, his anger, his frustration, it just all played out like so well, and I believed it. Like the enormous amount of pressure he was under to get his company.
Yeah.
Off the ground again. I believe his performance so much, and I loved it. I can't say enough good things about Tracy Letts.
Well, to clarify too, he's playing Henry Ford the second.
Yeah, the son.
Yeah, the son of the Henry Ford who started the Ford Motor Company.
And so he's essentially like in his father's shadow.
Exactly.
The entire time. Yeah. And you really get a sense of that and feel that from Tracy Letts, from his character. And I was so impressed. And like, honestly, like, I don't know if he's ever gotten a nomination before, but, like, he's definitely not going to get one, but, like, I would love to see him get a nomination for this.
He may have gotten an Oscar nomination, I should know this, but he is a playwright, too. He wrote the play August Osage County, which also, which was a movie with, like, Meryl Streep and Julia Roberts a couple years back. That may have also gotten an Oscar nomination for writing, so he may be an Oscar nominee. But he is, I'm pretty sure he's a Tony Award winner.
I'm looking at the list now. He's gotten, I mean, he was obviously in Lady Bird. So, like, he's been in, like, Ensemble. And
I believe he's also in Little
Women. He got a SAG Award for Homeland and.
Yeah, he's an actor. Yeah. Too.
Like, he got a Writers Guild for Best Adapted Screenplay based on August Osage County
For August Osage.
For the Writers Guild. Yeah. So no Oscars, but
he's a well-known, respected person in the industry.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And also thought he was great too. He has one of the standout scenes in the entire movie. I won't give it away. It comes about halfway through, but it involves him being in the car.
Oh yeah.
Being in a Ford race car kind of for the first time, and his reaction to it is really something special.
Yeah.
So he
kind of in the seat with him.
Yeah.
And you feel, you can't really feel what he feels, but you can get a sense. He really delivers. I just think he really delivers, and he like, I think he gives a performance of his life in this role, and I just can't say enough good things about him. So
yeah, Tracy Letts is awesome.
Yeah, he's very talented. I would love to see him. I mean, he's been in a lot of stuff, obviously. He was in The Post. He was in, like, my favorite movie of 2 years ago, 2017. Mm. He played a pretty significant role in that. I'm a big fan of his.
So, one of the things that kind of involves Henry Ford and kind of the corporate world of Ford itself, I actually really oddly connected, I think, to the main struggle of the story, which is something that I think I wouldn't have if I were a younger person. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I'll explain in a second, but this is like a very adult movie. Like, this is a great movie to see with your parents. So
yeah. Well, we saw it with my mom.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really mean that because I think a lot of older people will like identify with a lot of the working struggles in this movie. And based on the first weekend at the theater, I think 80% of the attendees were over the age of 25, which I can see. But it also got an A+ cinema score, which is rare. Yeah. There's a rare and really promising. It means like people love this movie.
Yeah.
But to come back to my point about like the working struggle, kind of what the internal conflict is. So you have these creatives working at Ford. So the engineers, the designers, and the race car driver, Christian Bale, Ken Miles, who's eccentric and kind of a bad boy. And they are going up against the corporate world at Ford. So Henry Ford and his, for lack of a better word, minions. Mm-hmm. And so they are the red tape, and they keep encountering the red tape and having to like compromise and work around like what they want to do as creatives. And as somebody who's, you know, now been in the working world, like, you see that a lot, and you see the kind of compromises that you have to make in real life. Yeah. And I think I'm much more drawn to those types of stories now than I was when I was a kid.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's like, it's interesting you say the red tape, because it's, they take, it always seems like they take one step through the red tape, but then when they get through the red tape, it's two steps back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a constant struggle and frustration you feel throughout the movie.
And you're right, you feel it.
You like, really do feel it. Yeah. And
it's not just there or said.
Yeah. And like, one, because you're rooting for the characters. You're rooting for Christian Bale the whole time. You're rooting for Matt Damon the whole time. And two, because the red tape is, like, it seems so stupid.
Yeah.
Like, the rules they set and, like, what they want. Like, everything they want just seems so dumb and, like, unnecessary. Because you don't understand the corporate point of view. You're not getting that point of view. You're getting the boots on the ground point of view here. Like, you're like, oh, like, why in the world do we need... do we need to finish with three Ford cars finishing at the race finish line at the end for a good photo op? Why does that matter?
Yeah.
Don't the people matter? Doesn't the race car driver matter? Like, it just, like, to me, because I don't understand the corporate world and because I'm not that part of that world, it just did not make sense. But
yeah, well, I mean, I think like any job, you see, like, everybody answers to somebody,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, so, yeah. So, but who does Henry Ford the second answer to? To
probably a board of directors.
Yeah, and to his dad.
Yeah.
He's not, obviously not there, but he is answering to him. You know, he is in the room with him, even though he's not physically there.
Yeah, and so you see that like a lot throughout the movie, and just kind of those compromises that you have to make, and like, you really feel for it. It's so easy to be like, just listen to the people on the ground, but everyone kind of has a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so it's really kind of complex in that way. And without being, it's an old fashioned movie in that sense. It's like, it's kind of like a working movie, and it's like this cool movie about race cars.
Yeah.
But I actually didn't find it too patronizing or saccharine. And I mean that in the sense, like, patronizing as in, like, they didn't, like, hit me over the head with it. Like, we kept saying we felt things rather than them saying things a million times over.
Yeah.
So so I felt it did that well. And especially because that kind of stuff is hard to do from a screenplay perspective, because this movie required a lot of exposition. It requires like a lot of explaining what's going on. Like, engineering is inherently like that. So if you're talking about why like a race car works better like aerodynamically this way compared to another way, that is boring to talk about. But like, they did it visually in a way that was interesting to watch.
Yeah, well, you know, in a sense, this movie is not about the race cars. It's about the people behind them.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, it's about more than just racing. It's, you know, it's about exactly what you just said.
And there is a ton of race. There's a racing.
There's a lot of race.
And the racing is thrilling.
There is racing. It is thrilling. Yeah. 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 But
like, they do end up at Le Mans.
It is fun. It's a fun movie, but it's so much more. But I'm saying it's like, it's so much more than just race cars.
Had you ever heard of Le Mans before this movie?
I
hadn't.
So I have, because I know a lot of people that want to, my side job, my like regular job is I deal with photographers on a daily basis, and they're like, their goal, like, in shooting, like racing is like the big time is going to Le Mans, is going to France.
Cool.
Yeah. So like, that is their challenge. So, in that sense, I have heard of Le Mans.
It's Le Mans, but no D.
Am I saying it wrong?
Le Mans.
Le Mans.
Yeah. Like, it's,
I've been saying it with a D all along.
Well, so to confuse,
take the D out.
So Le Monde is the, French paper. Like,
which means, yeah.
So that's why it can be confusing.
Yeah, well, again, news. photographers. But yeah, so that's always like, you know, NASCAR is nice, Le Mans is
the panacea, the holy grail.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Cool. Well, I had never heard of it. I don't like know sports racing.
Yeah.
My
mom also was like a big drag racer.
Yeah.
So back in her youth, so she was I had heard about Le Mans from her.
Well, it's funny, as somebody who like never really followed sports racing or car racing, I oddly love a lot of movies
about racing.
Like, I love Ford v Ferrari,
Drive,
Drive.
What else did I see tonight?
Rush.
Yeah.
I love Rush. So, Justice for Rush. Like, that movie should have gotten Oscar nominations and it didn't. But, oh well. This movie will probably get some Oscar nominations.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Like, the sound is, like, excellent.
Sound is excellent. I was going to mention that. The sound mixing and sound editing.
Yeah.
I
think this is the front runner. I think the only other question mark is the movie 1917.
Yeah. I was going to say that.
So, which is a war movie. War movies tend to do well when it comes to sound. But...
Or space mission movies.
Yeah.
But we don't... Besides Ad Astra, do we have any of those?
Not particularly. Know. So I think, like, the vroom-vroom...
Vroom-vroom.
of car racing sounds really cool. And to that end, the editing, the regular editing.
Yes.
Like, cutting back and forth between the race and...
Yeah.
Being able to follow, like, who's in the lead and who's on the ground.
Yeah, I think it'll be a strong contender for editing, but I don't. As we were saying on the Irishman podcast, it's not what you do with the editing, it's how long the movie is and like how much you edit. So,
this is a long movie. This is almost 2.5 hours, I think.
Yeah, but it does not feel like it
not at all.
I think it's 2 hours, 20 minutes. But yeah, the editing is fantastic, especially the scenes at Le Mans where Christian Bale's character is cutting corners like really fast and do really quick cuts. It's very impressive. It's good editing. And the cinematography is also,
I agree,
pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well. And so other than like filming the race car scenes, there are a lot of really pretty sunsets.
Mm-hmm.
So most of this movie takes place in California. So like, of course you're going to get those West Coast sunsets, those California sunsets, which are just like really gorgeous to look at on the big screen. Those are kind of unbeatable. And especially like racing at sunset, it's just like really, really good to look at. So
yeah, I'm actually looking at your California pictures behind you.
So I really appreciated that. It was a very pretty movie. Can we talk about Bale and Damon?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, sorry. the two leads. Yeah.
And they are both being campaigned as lead actor for the Oscars this year. So,
as they should.
Which is already a competitive category. I personally think this is like Christian Bale's movie. Matt Damon's good, but like,
I agree.
Yeah.
I was actually gonna say the same thing as that. If it were to be a supporting actor and actor split, I definitely think this is Christian Bale's movie. Matt Damon is great.
See, it's interesting you say that because I would say it's slightly tilted in Matt Damon's favor of character. If you had to pick a lead character, like a number one and a number two, I would say Carroll Shelby, who's the engineer, Matt Damon, gets slightly more screen time than Christian Bale. I agree that they are both lead performances.
I see this movie as when he's first introduced as Christian Bale's, really his point of view, essentially.
It's both. It is both their point of views.
It is.
And this is the strength of the movie.
Yeah, it's complicated. It's good. This is a reason, I guess, why they are both being considered for best actor. So maybe they'll split it. Maybe they'll both win.
So Christian Bale since I think the first time that I can remember since The Prestige in 2006, he is doing his own accent and looks like Christian Bale.
Yeah.
So he's He's British and, like, not super skinny, fat, or, like, bulky. Yeah. So it's weird to see him.
Can like I make that. A bold statement?
Yeah.
I'd kind of like to see the Academy bump up actor and actress and supporting to from 5 to 10.
That would be interesting.
Just because, like, I feel like in today's entertainment business, there's so much more content coming out than just, like, you know, the top five best actors. I like, they did this with Best Picture. They increased it from 5 to 10 a few years. And why not do that with actors as well?
So, this would bring up another... This is a slightly unrelated topic, but another push right now is to do away with gendering the categories.
Oh, so, God, I hate 2019.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. I hate millennials so much.
I mean, to be fair to, like, non-binary people. So, but the... Okay. Problem that I see with that, I think these conversations should be had, but the problem I see with ungendering the categories would be that, let's be honest, like, more or less people, like, if we live in a sexist society, they would just nominate 10 males, females. Yeah. So, like, there is kind of a reason that we have these divisions.
Well, there's also male roles written for, or male actors, male roles, like... There are male roles and there are female roles. A lot of male roles can't be played by female actors. A lot of female roles can't be played by male actors unless, you know, you have some creativity there. So, but I mean, I do see an argument to have both male and female. Yeah.
No, I mean, there's a reason that they're there. Yeah. It's, I think, the broader conversation is, like, how do we get non-binary people involved in the conversation?
Yeah.
So I don't think the solution is probably to ungender the categories, but I think these conversations should be had to find out how we can do this.
Yeah. An argument could also be made to, like, split the categories to, like, you know, best African-American actor or, like, best Latino actor. Like, because some, you know, African-American roles are, like... Like, there are certain roles out there, like, you know, for instance, like, 12 Years a Slave. I don't want to bring it up again, but, like, you know, you can't have a white person play the main character in that movie. Like, or you can't have a white person play the main character in Harriet. So, like, what's to stop Hollywood from making a best black actor or a best Latino actor? So, like...
this also is starting to get into the category of a couple years ago when the Oscars proposed having... a most popular feature category, and that was almost like the consolation prize. And so if, like, say, for example, Black Panther would have probably won that best popular film category, but, like, what they're saying is, oh, you're not good enough for best picture, so here, have this like best popular film. And my knee-jerk reaction to that is, if, like, we had, like, a best African-American actor, it would be the same thing. It's like, it, which is kind of going against what you would want to see. It's going against the diversification. Right. So, but the point that we're making is that, like, we need to find a way to be more inclusive.
Yeah, no, that's... Yeah,
that's the broader point of what we're saying.
So what I'm saying is that I just think there's so much talent out there, and because the categories are so stacked this year, I'm honestly a big fan of the Academy pushing from 5 to 10 actors and actresses.
It's interesting. Yeah. So
I'd love to see. I mean, the Emmys do what, like?
Yeah, and to be fair, I do think there's been more television. There's been more of an increase in television shows than there have been in movies, but. There have been an increase in movies too, but
there's been a lot out there that people just don't have access to, like we were talking about. Like,
I think it would have to go up by one.
Six or seven.
It's interesting. It's bold. We should send this podcast to the Academy. Tell them what they think.
Yeah.
So,
but
yeah. Either
I digress.
Even, well, with the very competitive best actor, with, like, Joaquin Phoenix and Adam Driver and Robert De Niro, this is going to be a hard field to break into.
Yeah.
And the Academy obviously loves Christian Bale. He's been nominated a lot. He's won once. But he's very well liked. Even though despite a couple of his like transgressions, like when he yelled at the director of photography on the set of Terminator Salvation. Which is funny because he has a hot temper in this movie.
Yes.
In Ford v Ferrari. So I thought it was like kind of funny to see that on screen because he's like kind of done it in real life. But my point is like, he's so charismatic in this role and he's just so outgoing and just like completely sells his character, and he does it effortlessly, and I love him for it.
Yeah. So like my other question is like, how do you feel about like, sorry, going back to the actor talk, like for example, Adam Driver is in like 4 movies this year, like 2 of them being like really strong acting performances, like for example, like Marriage Story and The Report. So like, what are your thoughts on like one actor like he should like be nominated for one movie, like, because like I feel like Adam Driver like he plays 2 very different performances in like The Report and Marriage Story, but like I would like to see him nominated for both, which is also another like argument to push up the nomination.
Well, they have a rule against that. Yeah. You cannot be nominated in the same category for 2 different movies. Mm-hmm. For acting, at least.
I think they should change that rule.
So you cannot do that.
Yeah, well that's my argument, is change that rule and bump the number. So I mean, obviously I know, like, you know, Matt Damon and Christian Bale haven't been in more than one movie, at least this year, for in terms of nominations. But in the future, because I know they have, like, Christian Bale, like, American Hustle and Batman in the same year? Was that...
I don't remember.
Anyway, I'm going off topic, so...
Well, that's, like, part of the politics of Oscars, is that you're... For better or for worse, most people I think would argue worse, but for better or for worse, the award that they're giving you isn't strictly based on that performance, because like they have like career wins,
like people, Robert Dinger,
people who haven't won, who've been nominated like 4 or 5 times, and then they're like, then they win on their 5th time. In a way, they're like being rewarded for their previous work too. So it's, you can't eliminate those kind of biases. People come in with like those biases, especially in an award show like the Oscars, which is handed to by your peers. Mm-hmm. So it's like people you work with. So like you do have emotions attached to it, even if you want to admit that you don't or say that you don't.
Yeah,
there are emotions attached, which is why all of these reasons are reasons why I find the Oscars so fascinating.
Yeah.
So... But at the same time, that means you can't take the Oscars like too seriously. Like, so if your favorite movie doesn't actually win Best Picture, like, no, it's not because it wasn't the Best Picture. It's because these are awards handed to by industry professionals.
Yeah. You know, it's also like one of those situations. Like I love the Oscars. I love the build up and the anticipation of the Oscars, and the ceremony comes and more than half the time you're just like, like, that was expected, or like, I'm disappointed. But, you know, I always have like my personal favorites from the year, and they always differ from those that are either nominated or win. Like, you have Green Book, for example. Like,
oh, I'm so glad you brought up, you're so glad you brought up Green Book, because I felt like Ford versus Ferrari was like a good version of Green Book.
Yeah.
So it's about, both movies are about 2 guys in the 1960s who like try to overcome sort of perceptions about each other and like work together to like do something, and it's a kind of drama, kind of comedy, and I like, loved this movie, whereas, like, I didn't love Green Book. So it's maybe in the future I'll, like, not like Ford vs. Ferrari and I'll find something problematic with it. But I finally understand how people felt about Green Book, because that is how I feel about Ford vs. Ferrari.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, like, what did you say about Green Book? It's like a Green movie to make white people feel better about themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Not that there's a lot of diversity in Ford v. Ferrari. This might be
another movie to make white people feel better about themselves.
But for, like, it just totally worked on me. Yeah. Like, I totally bought into its charm.
Yeah. Well, there's also that, and the performances are a lot better in this movie, I think. So. Yeah.
No, I think Mahershala Ali is great in Green Book.
He's good. No, yeah, but, like,
I have no problem with him winning Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah, but like,
the movie itself,
there's
is trash.
But there's a lot other, like, there's a lot better performances in Ford versus Ferrari than there are in Green Book.
Consistently, like, throughout
consistently
the movie.
Better. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, everyone, the ensemble, all the supporting. Yeah.
The ensemble is better. Yeah. And the last performance I'll give a shout out to, I'm becoming a big fan of Noah Jupe.
My boy Noah,
literally boy because he's like 13 or 14. He plays Christian Bale and Katrina Balfe's son, and he is, like, probably gonna be big in the next few years too. So he was also the lead in the new indie movie with Shia LaBeouf called Honey Boy. Mm-hmm. And he was, like, fantastic in that movie. I loved that movie.
Yeah.
And he's also the son in A Quiet Place.
So, and I forgot about that until you mentioned it. So
he's, like, in these, like, movies that are becoming, like, very successful and with indie cred too.
Yeah.
So I really think you should keep an eye on Noah Jupe.
Yeah. He really impressed me in Honey Boy.
Yeah.
As far as everything else with Honey Boy, I wasn't the biggest fan. I liked Honey Boy. I didn't love it. But
I was surprised at how much I loved it. And I think a lot of that had to do with Noah Jupe's performance.
Yeah, he was pretty great. So
so he's the other person I'll give a shout out to in Ford v. Ferrari. But, I mean, honestly, everyone's great. John Bernthal,
yes, Josh Lucas. Yeah. I'm glad John Bernthal's moving into more serious
yeah roles. I'm glad he's, like, not playing a douchebag anymore. Like, he was typecast as the douchebag for such a long time, so he's kind of moving away from that, thank god.
The Punisher.
Yeah. Or, like, the tough guy.
Yeah.
So, and he's moving away from that, so he's been doing that the past couple years, so I'm
yeah
happy.
And he was actually a really likable character in Ford versus Ferrari.
He's very likable. Well, great. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Ford v. Ferrari?
Just as far as nominations, I'm sure I'm getting this wrong, but I think I'm hoping at least one Best Actor nomination. I think this is going to be one of the movies that surprises us and like, we're going to get one that we don't like. So I'm hoping at least one Best Actor. I'm hoping for Best Supporting Actor, but I know we're not going to get that. I know we're going to get a lot of technical awards nominations, and potentially writing.
Maybe writing. I think this is a solid shot of getting a Best Picture nomination because it's so well-liked.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people...
I'm going back and forth on Best Picture. I would say now, yes, but, like,
I don't think it could win.
Also, it's definitely not going to win Best Picture, but nomination for sure. It's definitely in my top 10. But we'll see. I don't know. It could get snubbed either way. But, and remember, it's a long way till nominations day. There's still a lot to come out. I'm going to say total 7 nominations.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. Yeah, so, somewhere around there.
And my final grade, I gave it, A-. I gave it an A-.
Yeah, that's my grade too. A-.
Huh? Oh my goodness, we finally agree on something.
Agreed, like solidly agreed. I don't think there was much we disagreed on. Completely.
Yes, overall solid, really good movie.
Yeah, even like at the individual level, we didn't like disagree on something. Like, we both liked performances equally, and
look at that, we can be friends again.
Wow. Yeah. Awesome. Well, you want to do Oscar revisionist history?
Yes.
Is it your week this week?
It's my week.
Yay!
This week. And I think I'm. Yeah. So yeah, you went 2 weeks in a row because I wanted to wait till this week. So.
Can I guess?
Go ahead. Yeah.
So my first guess would be the last car racing movie, which was Rush, which did not get a Best Supporting Actor nomination, but should have. So I was thinking you were going to go 2013 Best Supporting Actor.
No. Good guess.
My second guess is because Ford v. Ferrari is directed by James Mangold, who also directed Walk the Line. So thought you were going to do something from 2005 and Walk the Line. He also directed Logan, so that Logan was my third guess.
No.
But no. Guess. Oh my god, my three guesses were wrong.
Yeah. So I want you to think way back to 4 years ago in 2015. Both Matt Damon and Christian Bale were nominated for supporting actor.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So I am going with the year that both of these actors were nominated together, separate categories, but they were nominated together.
So Matt Damon, was he nominated for The Martian?
2015. Yes, Matt Damon was nominated for The Martian.
So which category are we going in?
So I was going to actually do both.
A double? Yeah. Oh, yeah, love this.
So what I was going to do, play a little game. So Matt Damon was nominated for The Martian. Obviously, he didn't win. And Christian Bale was nominated for The Big Short. Also did not win. So I wanted to focus on both of these categories. And I wanted to say... I wanted to go a little different route this time.
I'm going to combine them, ten, and pick the best one?
Yeah. No. I wanted to take both of these actors out of the running.
Okay.
So I wanted to do four. And replace Matt Damon with someone you think deserved a... Best actor that year, and replace Christian Bale with someone you think deserved a nomination that year.
Okay.
I know it's a little different, but like, I don't know. I figured we'd change it up a little bit.
Yeah. But, go for it. Can you give me the nominees that year?
Okay. Yeah. So let's go. Let's start with Best Supporting Actor. So Sylvester Stallone for Creed, which, by the way, awesome movie. I loved Creed. Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight. Tom Hardy for The Revenant. Christian Bale, which we're eliminating for The Big Short, and Mark Rylance won for Bridge of Spies. Mm-hmm. You can say if you think he deserved it this year, but I kind of wanted to do the replace thing. So like, who do you think of these people deserved a nomination over Christian Bale and The Big Short?
Thinking back to then,
of all the,
yeah. So do you want me to say of the other four who I think should have won?
Yeah. You can say that, too.
Tom Hardy, I think, should have won. Even though I don't love The Revenant, that would have been my other pick. So, a couple
of... This is supporting actor.
Supporting actor, yeah.
Yeah, we're starting with supporting actor.
Yeah, so... a couple of the movies that came out that year were... Steve Jobs, and actually Seth Rogen's really good in Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. Maybe Jacob Tremblay for Room. Speaking of good child actors. So maybe one of those two. It's been a while since we've had a child actor nominee, so I'll go with Jacob Tremblay for Room.
For a supporting actor?
Yeah, for the fifth nominee.
Yeah, okay.
Those are the first ones I can think of off the top of my head. I mean, I'm sure I could do a long dive, but...
Yeah. So I've been thinking about this quite a bit. And I thought 2015, a really big and important movie that came out in 2015, which did not get a whole lot of love at the Oscars, was Straight Outta Compton.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, I don't know if I think he would have been in the supporting actor category, but I thought O'Shea Jackson Jr. gave a really stellar performance in that movie. And I really wanted to see him get a nomination. So I would put O'Shea Jackson Jr.
That movie was definitely not as well received at the Oscars.
And not as it could have been. But I thought it was a very important movie at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually going to go with O'Shea Jackson Jr. And I know, like, it's really, like, it may be controversial, but...
No, this was an Oscars so white year, too.
Yes.
And so, especially because, like, it didn't get that many nominations.
Yeah.
So, like, definitely a person of color should have been nominated that
yeah.
year.
Yeah. So,
so that's a good pick.
I think he's a talented person. I think he's a very talented actor. And then, so as far as best actor goes, so the actors were, let me pull it up here. Best actor was Eddie Redmayne for The Danish Girl, Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs, Matt Damon for The Martian, which we're eliminating, Bryan Cranston for Trumbo, and Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant, which won. So who would you eliminate, or who would you put in place of Matt Damon?
This is a good actress here.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're gonna probably hate me.
Oh no.
Because it feels like a cop out answer, but maybe Tom Hardy for Mad Max Fury Road. Which is in part of the reason why I would have picked him to win Best Supporting Actor, is because he's also great in Mad Max Fury Road.
So I don't know if you saw my face, but I was thinking the exact
same. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought... So I guess I'll go with my second pick then.
No, you could go with that too. Yeah.
No. Well, I was shuffling between a few things, but my number one would have been Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
For Mad Max.
Also Charlize Theron. Should have been nominated that year, but wasn't.
Freaking yeah. one. Yeah. My other contender was Michael B. Jordan for Creed.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Again, Oscar's so white.
Yeah.
But also,
I know I'm horrible. I picked two white guys.
Yeah. No, I'm a diverse one here. Also very strong performance. And very, very, very good movie. I think that was in my top five.
Yeah.
Creed was in my top five that year. So.
And led to Black Panther. It was Ryan Coogler.
Yes, Ryan Coogler. Yeah. Huge, huge fan of Angela Bassett and Michael B. Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So.
Of the other nominees.
Maybe George Clooney for Tomorrowland, but that's a joke.
Yeah.
It's a joke.
You know my feelings on George Clooney.
I know.
But I also want to give out to shout out to Michael Fassbender and Steve Jobs. I think he's great. I think that movie's underrated.
I like Steve Jobs a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was great. I'm just trying to like think of other movies like.
Yeah, I actually don't love 2015 as a movie year, but it was an interesting Oscar year because you really didn't know it was going to win Best Picture.
2015 was the year of Jurassic World.
Yeah.
It's a very important year for me. Okay. Should have won everything.
It's like I love Mad Max. I love Spotlight.
I'm one of the few people that love Jurassic World, but
No, you're not. Oh my God, a ton of people love Jurassic World.
Everyone I talk to hates Jurassic World. You love Jurassic Park so much. Why do you hate Jurassic World?
So, fun fact, I actually don't hate the second Jurassic World.
Oh no, we've talked about this. Yeah.
Like and that got so much hate, and I thought it was like. Fine.
And we talked about this before, like upon second viewing of Fallen Kingdom, I liked it a lot more than the first time. I think the first time I saw it, I was so distraught and so upset by the Brachiosaurus scene.
I
was like trying to hold it in front of my parents who I saw it with, and I was like, oh my God, I can't handle this. It was so sad. It's like seeing your cat die in front of you.
Oh my God. Wow, you went morbid. Dark. You went dark.
Anyway, that's my revision.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Thought we changed it up.
That is creative, and I never would have guessed it. So
okay.
I'm really glad you did that.
I was glad you didn't guess it.
Yeah, I was way off. So. Cool. All right, well, anything else to add before we wrap things up?
No. Yeah. Go see Ford versus Ferrari. Stop what you're doing right now. And go see Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah. And let us know what you think. Always send us an email at...
How do you do that?
stepandrepeatpod@gmail.com. Share your thoughts, questions, or concerns, or corrections if we got something wrong.
Yeah.
Like, and please let us know.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah. If you search for us at Step and Repeat Podcast, we'll certainly come up. So...
Yep. All right.
Well, thanks again for tuning in, everyone. Yeah, please be sure to rate and review us. Yeah, that's how we find new people. So yes. Would always love to spread the word and get more audience members. Well, cool. All right.
Until next week.
Until next week, guys.
Bye.
See you later. Bye.